fugitive must be a rolling stone. Down every road there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
I think they missed the boat. They should have used that theme song on the original program. Hi, Red, everybody. It is Tuesday evening, and we're ready to kick off another exciting evening of programming on KSAV. To do that, we're going to start off with Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby. I noticed a couple weeks ago that I neglected, this is hard to believe for a veteran like me, I neglected to give out the phone number and email address. So we'll do it this time. If you want to be on the program tonight, 800-407-KSAV, 800-407-5728. If you want to email during the program only, talk@ksav.org. All the rest of the time, fugitive@ksav.org, and then they will go directly to the hosts. Speaking of the hosts, here they are right now, Bobby and Kitty. Bobby, you start things off.
Okay, thank you, Dave. Hello, Kitty. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm good, Bobby.
Okay, well, where are we right now? We're in season one, and we're at an episode called The Girl from Little Egypt, which is number 14 of the series. And this is an extremely important episode because it basically tells the backstory of the fugitive, what happened leading up to the fact that he's now running for his survival on the road. And it's a very well-liked episode. As a matter of fact, when we reviewed it a couple of years ago, I gave it a 10 rating, which is as high as it can be, because I think it's a very entertaining story. I'm never bored by it. I've seen it many times. It's an interesting story, and it's got a lot of good points. However, it's one thing to be entertaining, and it's another thing to be informative. And I think when you're doing an episode that tells the backstory, you really ought to do it the right way, and it ought to make some sense. Otherwise, it really fails. People who are familiar with Ed Robertson's book, The Fugitive Recaptured, know that he tells the story that this is the episode that was never going to happen, that the producers had no intention of doing this story and no interest in doing this story and until they ran it past test audiences before it ever went on TV. And the one thing that they found out was that people wanted to know more. They wanted to know how Richard Kimball got to be where he is. When the series begins, he's in Tucson, Arizona, and he's already, I believe, Kitty, aren't we told that he's been on the run for like 6 months?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's the first thing that the narrator says, I believe, is that he says it's been 6 months since he became a fugitive.
Right, so we basically start pretty much in the middle, and you have to wonder, you know, is it enough for a narrator to come on and say, listen, this is the story, this is who he is, this is how I got here, don't ask any other questions. I personally find that kind of arrogant. I don't really approve of the way they did that, but it's hard to argue with success. You know, it didn't hurt anything, so they basically got away with it. But test audiences wanted to know that, and it's obvious that ABC was worried that it might stop it from being a success on TV, so they decided to take this seriously, and I'm glad they did, because I would hate to think that we would be at this point so many years later and not really know exactly what happened at the beginning of the story. Now, the problem with this is, for me, is that they don't just do this as an episode having only to do with Richard Kimball and how he got to where he is. They wind it around a rather pedestrian story about a young woman who is having an affair with a married man, and Kimball plays older brother to her, and, you know, that detracts from it because it takes up huge chunks of this story. And several months ago at the other fugitive group, not at ours, somebody had written in and posted on the board about this episode. He said that he liked it very much, but that he wishes they had just stuck to the story and just stayed with the backstory and forget about all that other stuff. And I don't have a problem with that, with the story of this woman. Her name is Ruth Norton in the story. I don't have a problem with it. It's no better, it's no worse than countless other stories in which she helps somebody. I have a problem with it only because it's sitting there in the way, and I have other things on my mind. I want to know what happened to him. You know, she'll take care of herself. She'll come to her senses someday, and that'll be the end of it. It's not really very compelling compared to what we have here. So what they use is that story as a way to start, that Kimball's out on this road trying to hitch a ride as usual, and she's very distraught. She's driving her car down the street like a lunatic, and she practically runs him over, and he ends up in the hospital, delirious, and starts mumbling about his past. Luckily for him, she's the only one standing over his bed, so she's the only one who hears this story. And this gives them a chance to do a flashback. And so the first thing we get is, of course, we see Richard Kimball and his wife, Helen, and the night that they had this big argument. We're not going to get into that tonight simply because we've already done that about a month or so ago, or when we started this series back at the beginning of the year. We did an extensive show, one or two shows, about the Kimball marriage and about whether this was the right way to portray and so forth and so on. So we've kind of beaten that into the ground. We know that story about how that happened and how he ran out of the house that night and then what happened after that. Now, very important here, right at the beginning in this flashback scene, the first one of this episode, is that we finally get to see the one-armed man. It's the first time when he runs in front of a car, first time we see him. This is 14 episodes. We've been through 13 episodes, and all we have is Kimball's word on the fact that there's a one-armed man. For all I know, maybe Gerard is right. Maybe he's delusional. But now we actually see him run out in front of the car. We see all of that. We see Kimball go into the house, find his dead wife on the floor, so forth and so on. And they run through that whole sequence, very well known these days, becomes a part of the opening to the rest of the series later on. And that's it. What is really new here, of course, is that later on in the flashback scene, we see what happens to Richard Kimball after the train wreck. He's being taken to death row by Gerard, and there's a train wreck. How does Kimball get away, and how is he freed? And it's a good question. I think it's something, you know, that you really wonder about. And we see him running through the woods and frantically trying to get away. He's got handcuffs on, one on his wrist. And apparently he had been handcuffed to Gerard on the train. For some reason, somehow, the handcuffs either cracked open or broke open, and he was able to get away. I'm not sure that I understand that, how that could have happened without anybody being injured. That's what we see. We see Kimball running through the woods. We don't see Gerard at all. I have no idea what happened to Gerard. What happened to him? Is he in the woods somewhere also? That's a real good question. They decide not to go there. So we see Kimball getting away, running through. The police are after him. They're all out in force. And this is a very, very good sequence. I really like this part of the story. He's hiding, and he's crouching low to the ground, and he's terrified that they're going to catch him. This is very exciting stuff. I like it a lot. And we see him break into a gas station to get a file that conveniently happens to be right inside the window. And he pulls that out, and then he hitches a ride on the back of a truck to get away. And the last thing we see of that is that he is simply filing this handcuff to try to get it off his wrist. It's all very nice, and it's all very good, but it leaves a lot of questions unanswered, because the next time we see him, we see, in another flashback sequence, we see the trial. Now, we're not going to talk about the trial tonight, because that's so ridiculous. We have to do an entire show on that, so we'll do that in 2 weeks. But, so... Here's the whole purpose of this part of this episode is to fill in the blanks. And for me, I got more questions now than I had before. I don't understand. What happened to Kimball after the train wreck? What happened to him after he gets on that truck? How did he get away, and who helped him get away? You know, 2 weeks ago we did a show all about people helping him and Kimball helping them, one hand washing the other constantly throughout the series. And the one time I want to know who helped him, they don't tell us about it at all. So I have no idea to this day how he managed to get away. He's got no money. He's got no clothes other than what he's wearing. He's got nowhere to go. He's got nowhere to live. It's a disaster. How did he get away? He didn't end up in Tucson, Arizona right away. We know that. That's many months later. He's not in the position to end up in Tucson getting off a bus with a suitcase. So there's a lot missing here, and I think that really hurts. Kitty, what do you think? Do you really miss this part of the story? Would you like to know what it is that happened after the train wreck?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's kind of a shame that they decided to throw this story with Ruth Norton in there, because Ruth Norton's story really doesn't have a whole lot to do with... I mean, her problems don't really have that much to do with Kimball's problems. And it seems like Ruth's story could have been fleshed out more, and that could have actually been a completely different episode. You know, in this instance, I think it would have been interesting if we could have seen Kimball come across maybe the person or persons who helped him escape from Indiana. And interestingly enough, in the movie, we do see how Richard Kimball escapes. I mean, you see Harrison Ford going back to the hospital in what he's thinking would be the last place anyone would look for him. And he steals clothes and money and food off of an unsuspecting patient. And in the Fugitive remake, the TV series in 2000, they actually showed a flashback where you saw how Kimball actually got out of Illinois with the help of Shirley Knight, who's made appearances on the original series. I think that it's definitely a disservice to the story here because, once again, it feeds into this thing that Richard Kimball is this fugitive who never seems to have any problems finding money or finding clothes. He's always wearing good clothes, always has money in his pocket, and yet in those flashbacks, you're left to wonder, well, where did he get the money and where did he get the nice clothes that we always see him with?
Well, you mentioned the movie, and it is striking. There's a real difference between what happens here and what happens in the movie. And I say, if this is sufficient, what they did here, then why did they change it in the movie? Because Roy Huggins, who created the series, had some input into the movie and some input into the 2000 series. You would think if he thought that that was such a great idea that they had done that then, that he would have said, listen, we don't need to change anything. Let's just keep it basically the way it is. But they don't. They go out of their way to make, that's a long sequence in the movie showing how, after the train wreck, what he did, how he got away, how he cut off his beard, all of this, and it's very striking when you compare one to the other. And so I think that some people might have looked at it and said, you know what, there's just too many holes here.
Yeah, precisely. And also, in the case of Gerard, you are left to wonder, where is Gerard in this train wreck?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and nothing's ever said in the first series, in the first pilot episode of Fear in a Desert City. The train wreck doesn't really even come up. We don't know, did Gerard... I'm left to believe that Gerard must have been injured. He must have been unconscious. And that was how Kimball got away from him. But nothing's ever said.
Is it believable that handcuffs could break open like that and neither one of them gets injured? That's hard to believe. I mean, Kimball's in remarkable shape for the fact that he got thrown off the train. And beyond that, I would like to see what Gerard's reaction was, because you wonder why he's so obsessed. And of course, he keeps telling everybody the law says he's guilty. I enforce the law. But is there a little bit more to it than that? What was his reaction right after that? Remember in the movie, and here's another striking difference with the movie. In the movie, Tommy Lee Jones comes into the movie after the train wreck and takes over the movie, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it becomes his story. I mean, Kimball's hardly in the story. It's all about Tommy Lee Jones. He takes over, he bosses everybody around, proves right away that he must have gotten away, and the chase is on immediately. I mean, it's a great performance. He won the Academy Award, well-deserved.
Probably explains why he got a follow-up movie playing the same character.
Yeah, exactly. And so we get to see, and he's all business there, too. I mean, he's had no prior contact with Kimball at all. And also in the original series, they're handcuffed together on the train, but in the movie and in the subsequent series in 2000, they're not together at all. They're not on a train, Kimball's on a bus in the movie, and then in the 2000 series is in a van, and Gerard isn't with him either time, so they changed that too. There's a lot of changes here that strike me as being odd to have to change it that way. I wanted to know what Gerard's reaction was. If you assume that he didn't get injured, which is far-fetched, but okay, so he didn't, is his obsession partly based on the fact that Kimball got away on his watch? That he's determined to find him now, because we never really hear that. He never, that I can recall, I may be wrong, I can't recall any episode in which he says, I got to get him because, I was responsible for bringing him in, and he got away, and I'm going to be the one who's going to get him back. We never really hear that, and so...
Although I've always got the impression that was part of the reason why Gerard was so obsessed with getting him.
Right. And so there's a really good story here. And if you hear about a prison break or anything, you know that prisoners get away even though they're guilty. They've got to find money. They've got to find someplace, some shelter. They often break into somebody's house, take hostages, kidnap somebody, steal, do something in order to survive. Now, of course, we know Kimball's not going to do that because he's not the type. So what did he do? I mean, a man on the run out in the middle of the night who suddenly plunged into this out of nowhere.
It sounds like he needs a good accomplice. You know, you can't overstate the value of a good accomplice.
That's true.
We're going to take a quick time out, give you a chance to catch your breath. We've got a caller on the line when we come back, and we will be back in about 60 seconds and continue to talk Fugitive on Sherevision Radio.
Today are Dr. Phil,
hello,
Homer Simpson,
woo-hoo!
And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Good morning.
These guys are here to help me tell you about my program, Talkin' Television with Dave White on KSAV.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Every Tuesday from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, we have a fun discussion of television past and present.
Is that the truth or a lie?
What do you guys think of my program?
A load of crap.
Boring.
Outrageous.
And what about my co-host, television guru Tim Carmody?
A drunk pimp.
Jerkass!
But don't take their word for it. Tune in and join in every Tuesday, 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time on KSAV.
We mellow out here. Talking Fugitive on a calm Tuesday evening. Now, I want to remind everybody, following tonight's program, the Perfectly Frank show, which is proving to be extraordinarily popular, even despite the host that we have on that. And at 7:30 tonight, Pacific Time, it's going to be Talking Television with Dave White, the author of the book Columbo File, will be the guest, and we'll talk about a somewhat quirky detective in Lieutenant Columbo. Kimball's lucky he didn't have to go up against Columbo, isn't he?
That would have been interesting.
Well, actually, Columbo probably would have proved him innocent because he always got the right guy.
All right.
All right.
You guys go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess we've got Ken on the line, so let's talk to Ken.
We do, Ken. Welcome back one more time.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Ken.
Hi, Kitty.
Yeah, so what's up?
Well, The Girl from Little Egypt, I also gave it a 10 rating when I reviewed it 2 years ago because the flashback answered some of my questions, but I agree with you, Bob. There are still more questions, and it's kind of an eerie little flashback. You know, the scene where Helen and Richard are fighting, the impression I got when they were arguing was that Richard, you're kind of an idiot just to kind of storm out of the house, get into the car, and go over to the lake.
And did you notice something in that scene? He didn't lock the door behind him.
He just kind of stormed out real mad.
He didn't even lock the door.
Yeah. I mean, when I argue with my wife, I don't just storm out the door, get into the car, and go over to a lake. So I've always kind of faulted Kimball. And did you catch a little hint that later on, I think Kimball felt guilty that he left Helen in the house, and that episode, the end is but the beginning. He's talking, you know, and then he's writing the letter to his father, and he kind of felt guilty that he left Helen there.
Right.
So.
And actually, that's the episode I pointed out where that seems to be the only episode where we actually see him showing some remorse that his wife is dead.
Right. But I also think it was very good of the producers not to answer every single question. For example, they did not show Helen and the one-armed man in the house. They left that a mystery for the whole 4 years.
Oh,
and then finally, at the last episode, we're on the edge of our seat, and we actually find out what happened. So I thought that was smart of them. But Yeah, the girl from Little Egypt, everyone has to see that. If you're a Fugitive fan, you've got to see that episode.
Which episode?
Girl from Little Egypt.
Oh, you got to see that. Well, yeah.
Yeah, everyone has to see that.
What I want to know from Ken is, because you're always saying that you wanted a total pilot episode right at the beginning that showed everything. So you want to put this at the top of the series, right? You want to, you're not starting with Fear to Desert City, right? You'd rather see this fleshed out and show everything, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the proper way to start a series myself.
Right.
Just starting with Fear in a Desert City, a little strange for me. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, well, they could have done Fear a little bit. They could have done it as a second episode, because this sets the precedent for helping people and putting himself in danger. So we get that right away, the second episode. If you start the series with this particular episode, forget about the Ruth Norton thing. This
right.
Kitty's right. I mean, this is a very kind of average, mundane, we see it all the time episode. There's nothing unusual going on here. We see this over and over and over again. So here's the problem. One of the biggest problems I have with this particular episode is that it has the look about it that it's done in a hurry, that they did not give a lot of thought to it, that they didn't really want to do the backstory. They didn't want to do it, but they did it anyway. But if you either do it sincerely and do it the right way, or don't do it. Because for me, they made it worse. They, to do a couple of flashback scenes and nothing else. And every time I watch it, I get the feeling that somebody looking over my shoulder and saying, "Okay, is that enough now? Are you happy now? You got to see him. He ran through the woods and he got out of the handcuffs. You saw a little bit of the trial. So now will you get off our backs and let us get on with what we really want to do, which is the rest of the story?" And I think that misrepresents the story. They really owed people that story. But it doesn't look that way when I see holes big enough to drive that train through. And I got to wonder what the sincerity was in really wanting to do this story, or are they just throwing us crumbs? Do you feel that way, Kitty, that it's not quite sincere?
Well, yeah, and I again think it's interesting that here it is, they had an opportunity to present a well-rounded story that would really explain a lot, and instead they fused just bits and pieces of it in with this other story. And it really strikes me with this series, with all of the episodes that we've seen, is that we've pointed out in the past that there are many plot possibilities for stories that they could have done, and yet they seem to want to stick to the formula of Kimball going somewhere and meeting up with every dysfunctional person in America to solve their problems. And, and just some of those stories, they're just ridiculous.
You mentioned the 2000 version of the series,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that they did that flashback episode with Shirley Knight, which
yeah.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was pretty late in the season, was it not?
I think it's like episode, I want to say it's like episode 14 or maybe
okay,
15.
So they didn't do it at the beginning.
No.
Could have done the same thing here, right? Could have brought back a character
mm-hmm.
that we did not see at the beginning,
exactly.
Who he ran into again for some reason. And then
yeah.
find out, like in the fourth season, oh, so this was the person who helped him that first night. And then
yeah.
backtrack it from there, because by the fourth season, they're desperate for stories. So why not go back and fill in the holes? I mean, you got plenty of time now.
Listen, speaking of time, we got another caller that wants to come on.
Okay,
Ken,
fine.
Ken, you got anything else you wanted to add?
Go ahead with the other caller.
All right.
I'll
well, we've
back.
Only got the one caller line, so it means I'll have to wish you goodbye in order to get her up here.
Okay, that's okay.
All right.
Thanks, Ken.
Ken, thanks a lot for calling. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. All right, it takes us just a minute. It's Linda from Pittsburgh.
Oh, great.
And we'll get her up on the board, as we say in radio jargon.
The home of the Super Bowl champions.
All right, I'll take your word for it. She's on there now. Linda, welcome to Talking Fugitive.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, Linda. How you doing?
Okay. I just wanted to say I agree with some of your points. There were some things missing, but none of that bothered me. I really love this episode, and maybe unlike a lot of other people, I like it because of Ruth Norton. And I like the fact that this is one episode where, for the first time, maybe, I'm not sure, it might have been a few episodes before, but in this one, he meets a stranger, she knows who he is, he doesn't have to pretend he's anybody else, none of the little quirks or none of the fear. We just see Richard Kimball the way he would have been as a normal person. I like that part about it. And
I like that too. I have nothing against the story of Ruth Norton. I mean, as I said, the Ruth Norton story could have been its own episode, you know, fleshed it out a little more, and you could have done an episode just about him meeting Ruth Norton without these flashbacks, you know, do it as two episodes.
I wonder if they just didn't think they had enough material or didn't want to get into that much detail about that night, so they combined it with another story so that they could come up with a full hour.
It's not in the book, so I don't know, but my own personal feeling is, and I have no serious knowledge of this, but I get the feeling in this episode that The Girl from Little Egypt was already written in advance, or at least the idea was written in advance, because it looks like they simply stick the flashbacks in there in the middle of nowhere. There's no real connection here for Kimball to suddenly fall asleep and start thinking about this. It just doesn't make any sense. So I get the feeling that somewhere along the line there was at least the basic outline of this story, and then they didn't want to do. I'm absolutely utterly convinced they did not want to do an entire flashback story. That was out of the question. So they needed a story in which they could fit this in, and to that degree, I would agree with you that this is probably the best story to fit this in. It's to some extent believable, if you kind of look the other way on certain things, but, it just kind of gets in the way, and it depends on what's more important to you. For me, it's about the flashback and about knowing what happened before. I mean, there are other stories involving young women who Kimball saves at the end that are far worse than this, so that's why I gave it a 10 in the ratings.
That's true. Entertaining.
It's a good story to watch, but it doesn't really do it for me. So I take it, Linda, that actually that's your favorite part of the episode.
Well, I just enjoy. I liked his relationship with her. I like the fact
the music on.
I don't hear anything.
Pardon?
Okay. I'm sorry.
I like the fact that he could be aggressive for a change and actually, threaten, what's his name, the Ed Nelson character.
Well, he's more a big brother in this.
Okay, I can hear it now.
Okay.
And he doesn't get that opportunity.
I'm sure
real
we do.
Often.
Linda, I've got to cut you off here because the program is going to end. At least I think it is. I think I hear it here. Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate it. And to Kitty and Bobby, thanks a lot for your good job. You'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm sorry to cut you short here, but I think things are coming to a close. Stay tuned for Perfectly Frank, and at 7:30, Talk and Television with Dave White. At 6 o'clock Pacific next Tuesday, Getting to Know You with Susan McCrae. Kitty and Bobby will be back in 2 weeks. And in the meantime, email them at fugitive@ksav.org. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, see you then on Sheravision Radio.